Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
We are opting out of the presidential preference election as the Republican Party, and we will notify the Secretary of State of our electors when the time comes.
What the Republican Party's made a decision to do is customary when the incumbent president is of your party. The same thing happened when George W. Bush was president, and I think the Democrats did this when Bill Clinton was.
I am glad that the committee is a diverse group of individuals that will hopefully be looking for the same thing. Someone that's interested in criminal justice reform and expanding diversion programs, just really look for the interim position to be a fair, well-experienced person with a good approach.
Andy Biggs is someone who has emerges a really strong support and advocate for the president's wall. He goes on Fox News frequently. He represents a border state, of course, so he has become, you know, one of the go-to Republicans when it comes to immigration.
And with us to talk about the GOP getting rid of its 2020 presidential preference election, along with Andy Biggs moving up in the Freedom Caucus and more, are Chuck Coughlin, president and CEO of High Ground, and attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Guys, welcome back.
Thank Pleasure to be here.
Now, Chuck is itching to talk about this, so Roy, I'm going to go to you first. 2020 presidential preference election, we played that cut from Governor Ducey. He made the point that it's happened for Republicans and Democrats. How significant is it, and does it take on more significance because President Trump is a controversial figure?
Well, I mean, it's as you said in the clip, I mean, it's happened before with Democratic presidents and Republican presidents where they've canceled the primary. Usually that's because there's no opponent in that primary, so there's no real point in having the the primary election. So it's not unusual. Now, I think it does signify, or at least it should signify, that the Republican Party has made a decision that they are all in with Trump, and that to the extent that people like Mark Sanford and Bill Weld and some others representing maybe other parts of the Republican Party, you know, really don't get an opportunity to say why they should be the nominee instead of Trump and what Trump has done wrong. I mean, I think they're basically 100% all in, and that's what this is showing.
Yeah, Chuck, politically, obviously it makes sense. But are there going to be some Republicans who say, well, I would like President Trump to at least have to answer a few things in a primary season?
Sure. There's some Republicans like that. They just don't happen to run the Republican Party. and so, I mean, we all know these are partisan primary elections that are conducted by the parties. So as Roy pointed out, every occasion that there's been an incumbent, whether it's President Obama or President Clinton or President Bush, the party of the office holder, hey, we're not going to have an opportunity to criticize the incumbent office holder. So, you know, that's up to them. They write the rules. It's not like most elections we experience are like, oh, this is the democratic process and we're in. No, this is a partisan primary that is we pay for as taxpayers that only Republicans or only Democrats can vote in. So, you know, hey, that's the way the rules of the road are made right now.
Chuck, on a practical level, does this actually change anything? I mean, the odds of Mark Sanford or Joe Walsh or Bill Weld actually winning a primary, pretty remote, I think, to say the least. They'll still probably be out saying what they're going to say anyway, right, regardless of whether or not people can actually vote for them.
All right. Something like snowballs in Phoenix, right? It's just not going to happen. And so he's, he's going to be the nominee, and they're going to – they'll put, you know, the networks, the cable networks will give those guys opportunity to be there and criticize, and they'll be out, but there'll be no formal process by which they can be elected. The party will hold its convention. This summer, they will, or next summer rather, they will elect their delegates to the convention, and Donald Trump is going to, you know, barring some cataclysmic incident, he's going to be the presidential nominee for the Republican Party.
Roy, do you see any practical effect to this decision on the GOP?
No, I mean, it is disappointing to me a little bit, though, and of course, I have to preface this by saying that I'm no fan of President Trump, obviously, as a Democrat, and it is a disappointment that there's not more Republicans, I think, within the party who, especially some Republicans who in private tell me about their reservations about President Trump, but then, of course, you know, they don't do that publicly, and I'm talking from, you know, elected office holders on down, that there's not enough of those people that would be willing to say, like, no, actually, let's have a debate on whether President Trump represents what a Republican should be or whether there's an alternative to that. Obviously, that's not going to happen practically speaking, but I think it does say something where everyone ultimately is just getting in line.
Chuck, President Trump's numbers among Arizona Republicans are great. Is that a surprise in any way, considering how controversial he's been? I mean, his approval rating is at least in the upper 80s.
That's a sign of the times. Okay. I mean, we saw, you know, what happened to Senator Flake when he decided not to be a Trump fan. Well, he's not a senator anymore. There you go. And so, you know, that's the status of party politics today. The Democrats have, like the Republicans, 4 years ago, have a very competitive primary going on. So did we. We did that primary process. They're doing that now with 10 candidates on the stage last night, and sorting through that, you know, having that intellectual and rigorous physical exercise of the party. We did that 4 years ago. The president won, and so he's going to be the nominee. And so I understand Roy's point of view. I'm not, you know, a giant Trump fan. I got issues on the immigration. I got lots of issues. But he, you know, it's that the party structure is not going to lend themselves to an ability to make the president weaker and criticize him publicly. He's got $56 million in the bank. He's going to husband those resources until such time as the Democrats have a nominee. And then it's going to be game time, because he's going to make that nominee as unappealing as he is to Republicans, as he is to Democrats, to Republicans and to independents and PNDs. So put your earmuffs on. It's going to get loud out there.
But in terms of spending resources and having debates and everything, he'd already said he wasn't going to debate the other candidates.
Right.
What, I mean, what difference does it make, other than the spending of the money that would have to happen in Arizona? What difference does it make to have a primary? In some cases, couldn't you make the argument that having him win a primary with 90% of the vote would be a boost for him?
Yeah, but it gives a platform from a strategist perspective. It gives a platform to your critics. And if you know he's going to be the nominee, you don't want to give a platform to your critics going into a competitive presidential cycle. I mean, I can make the argument. I think Lori Roberts in The Republic made an argument a couple weeks ago about McSally maybe getting an opponent might be a good thing for her. I'm sure McSally doesn't think that. You know, I could make a logical argument that, you know, that would be good, but she wants to, again, husband her resources for the general election and focus on Mark Kelly as an opponent. And so, you know, again, unless Roy and I have been on the inside of party institutions, it's a command and control structure. It's not, you know, it's not, hey, maybe this might be a good idea. No, it's if the chief guy is saying this is not a good idea, there may be some quiet conversations about that. But once everybody makes that decision and the doors open up and everybody comes out, that's what it is, you know. And so that's the world we live in partisan politics.
Roy, is this anything Democrats can make hay of, or is this going to sort of insider and people are just going to forget about this?
It's probably pretty insider. I mean, to the extent that you can make hay of it, it's kind of to Chuck's point that the Republican Party doesn't want to give a platform to people who have a disagreement with Trump. And so therefore, you know, Republicans are all behind him. And the consequences of that should be that, you know, that they Republicans down the ballot lose as well as Trump, again, from the Democratic perspective. But ultimately, you know, there's going to be so much money spent next year and so much attention that happens that a lot of this stuff is really not going to matter at the end of the day, because we are going to have this referendum on Trump. And that's what everyone's focus is going to be on.
All right, Chuck, let's move on to Representative Andy Biggs taking over as chair of the Freedom Caucus, which has been pretty influential, and perhaps not as much because obviously the House is in the hands of the Democrats, but with President Trump in office, a lot of these folks like Mark Meadows, for example, mm-hmm. brought up the example earlier this week. I just think of Mark Meadows sitting behind Robert Mueller when he was doing his testimony based on in front of Congress, and I feel mm-hmm. like it was sort of like a stare-down situation. Is this a situation where Andy Biggs is moving up in the world, and if so, are you surprised?
Again, in that internal world of Republican conservative politics, sure. And he fits that nomenclature. But, you know, I would offer the opinion of what has the Freedom Caucus done for the Republican Party other than put us in the minority? And so, you know, ultimately about legislating, and I respect Congressman Biggs. We had this had a fairly tumultuous relationship when he was Senate president when Governor Brewer decided to do Medicaid restoration. And, you know, she ran that through the body when he was Senate president over his objections. I respected him for allowing that to happen. He could have played a more Freedom Caucus card, but he allowed that to happen, allowed the process to move forward. But that's the guy he is. He's a small government libertarian, Republican, very conservative. You know, if there's a problem, it's because of spending and not about tax policy. It's like,
yeah, but political philosophy. I don't want to get too far into this for the newscap, but is he really libertarian?
Yeah,
really?
I mean, yeah, I characterize that part of the Republican Party that way. Yeah, that it's a very, you know, government shouldn't be doing these things. You know, that was the argument on Medicaid. That was the argument on, and that's where parts of that party, that's the struggle that the Republican Party has to amass a majority. And the president has had trouble with that Freedom Caucus too, and under, you know, Speaker Ryan. You know, that's, I would argue that caucus was the reason Speaker Ryan left the U.S., you know, and said, I'm done, because there's no compromise. And part of politics and part of getting big things done requires compromise, and they don't.
Does this do anything for Arizona, having him in this position? Does it matter one way or the other?
Probably not. I mean, as Chuck said, you know, when the Republicans were in the majority, the Freedom Caucus, you know, often held the caucus hostage over, you know, whatever their priorities are. But now that they're in the minority, it just doesn't really matter a whole lot. I think their existence these days, which is along the lines of, you know, somebody like Biggs, who is a kind of far-right Republican, has essentially now been to rubber stamp what the president does, particularly on immigration. So, yes, I mean, Biggs is let's say, a small D Republican, you know, small government Republican. But at the end of the day, he's also exhibited some pretty anti-immigrant rhetoric, echoing a lot of what Trump does. And so I think if you're President Trump, you probably really like this, because you're going to have an ally with the caucus that had been maybe problematic in the past.
But for a delegation that I think people like to talk about how, in the past at least, they worked together more closely, they're sure there was a fight about whether any of these congressmen should bring home pork or projects and that sort of thing. Is it tough to have, and maybe this is too far, Roy, but even having someone like Raul Grijalva on the left and having folks like Andy Biggs, Paul Gosar on the right, I mean, in that sense, is that negative for the delegation in any way?
Yes. it doesn't. It, you know, historically, you pointed that, you know, when historically those delegations have delivered major projects to Arizona, the CAP.
Late Congressman Pastore, of course.
Yes, yeah, sure. Congressman Pastore on light rail and infrastructure and transportation funding. They're go-to people. The two gentlemen you represent both very conservative and very liberal elements of the party, very progressive and very conservative. And I would argue that, you know, those positions, this is probably good for Mr. Biggs for his fundraising and that. But and we'll look forward to 2022 when we'll be redistricted and we'll see what his district looks like next time. Right now, he's pretty safe Republican district, representing that Southeast Valley, Mesa, Gilbert, that part of the state, which is very, very Republican, you know, probably a 25-point Republican participation advantage. But when redistricting, I would think that district's probably going to look a little different. It's going to be a little more competitive, I would think, but we'll see. It'd be good for him to raise money.
That is Chuck Coughlin. Also here is Roy Herrera with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday newscap, which continues after this. Good morning. It's the Friday newscap here on KJZZ 91.5 with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground, and attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera.
Guys, just to finish up the conversation with Andy Biggs, something that I've been curious about is, you know, we talked a little bit about the role of the Freedom Caucus in the majority when Republicans had the majority in Congress versus the minority. Andy Biggs is somebody who, until this year, had never served in the minority in any level of government. Chuck, does that affect sort of his strategy or the Freedom Caucus's strategy going forward? He's having to adapt to not being in the party in charge?
No, I think it helps with his purity of mind. So, smaller the room, the better it is that he can manage that room. And so, you know, that's the way it's going right now. I don't think it affects him, because I've known him, like I said, for a long time, and
he's going to do what
he believes.
Anyway.
What he believes, you know, it's not. You're not going to change Andy's mind about a lot, and I can testify to that from a firsthand experience.
Well, and it also, you know, you have to deal with the practical realities. I mean, I've worked on the Hill, both in the minority and the majority, and when you're in the minority, you know, in D.C., there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, especially in the House, the Senate, of course, is different. But in the House, you really are the minority, and you're not really in charge or can affect the outcome of what happens on the floor and things like that, other than just holding press conference and things like that. So, you know, to Chuck's point, I think, yes, I mean, it helps with, you know, you can just go back to, you know, what you actually believe and sort of promote that with any without any consequences legislatively, because you really can't get anything done anyways.
All right, Maricopa County Attorney, we have a committee that has been named now that will talk to the Board of Supervisors and find who at least the interim county attorney is going to be in Bill Montgomery's stead now that he's with the state Supreme Court. Roy, I was intrigued. It was an interesting, rather diverse group of people, I thought. And yet the ultimate call we found out based on the news release we got is that the Board of Supervisors can reject whoever they decide to recommend. But what do you make of this, and how significant, even if it's only for a year, how significant is this choice for the interim county attorney?
Well, it's a huge choice. I mean, it is one of the biggest district attorney offices, county attorney offices in the country as far as the amount of people that are served by it and the population, you know, underneath it. And the person who occupies that position, as we've discussed before on the shows, has enormous power in deciding what policies that office undertakes, particularly when it comes to, you know, charging decisions and what sentences to seek and what, you know, what crimes to focus on. And so whoever has that job is a really important job. And as we're talking about criminal justice reform, which I think is a much needed conversation and much overdue conversation, that next person is going to have to deal with that and hopefully deal with it in a positive way. I know most people on the commission. I think it's an interesting selection of people. I think it's a good selection as far as, you know, just a diverse viewpoint of what that job should look like. So I'm hopeful that they come up with you know, good choices. But as you said, I mean, ultimately, the Board of Supervisors can just reject it. I think the board's got to decide, do you want somebody who has a really good shot at reelection, which is probably going to be somebody more in the middle, or do you want to appoint somebody who is sort of more on the right wing, which is going to probably lead to a more competitive race.
Now, so since we're always looking for a scoop on the news cap, are you going to run next year?
Oh, I am definitely not going to run next year.
Chuck, I'm not going to ask you that question.
No, not qualified.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with Roy. I thought the process that the board put together was thoughtful. It's deliberative. It's open. There's good. You know, they have a timeline for submitted applications, and they'll interview some candidates. So we'll all be privy to, you know, who's on the list and how that deliberative process. Then we'll see the list. And as Roy said, they can pick who they want. I suspect they'll take the recommendation. I suspect there'll be some lobbying independent of that, of them. But I suspect they'll take the recommendation because they've established the process. And it's important from a collegiality standpoint. The board sets the budget for the county attorney. So, you know, we've seen poor relationships between counties' attorneys and boards where they've tried to indict board members. God bless Andy Kanasik and all the people that endured that. So they want a healthy relationship. So I think that's it's a good way to create this process. It's a very hard job. I think it's one of the hardest jobs in public service in Arizona because of the volume, as Roy said, the interagency working relationships with all the police departments in the valley, and it's just an enormously tough job. And so you need a good team of people that works, you know, they do civil stuff too, they represent the county. It's a very, very hard job. And so God bless whoever gets it, man, and I hope they do well for us.
Chuck, safe to say the supervisors are going to be looking for somebody who plans to run next year for a term of their own?
I would think so. I would think because that's the advantage of putting somebody in there that you have confidence in and then running, creating some name ID. You know, I talked to Bill the first time he ran, and recently we talked about this, and he goes, you know, you're just not prepared to run a campaign. You don't know what that's like. You know, coming from a legal profession, Roy's got some experience because he worked on Capitol Hill. He's worked for congressmen. Most of these lawyers come to it from, you know, a legal background. And running a campaign is like, I got to do that? You know, you're like, can I just be appointed to this gig? And it's a whole different ball of wax, right? And as Roy points out, it'll be competitive because the Democrats have proven in Maricopa County that they're capable of winning countywide seats, with Paul Penzone winning the sheriff's seat, with Kirsten Sinema winning on a statewide basis, with Kathy Hoffman winning here, and Adrian Fontes winning. I mean, that used to be never. That never happened. Well, it's happening now. So, Roy's how you navigate that as a Republican, you know, it's not your dad's Buick anymore. You got to know how to drive this car.
Roy, do you think the supervisors might be looking for somebody who will be, let's call them, a little less high profile? We've had people like Andy Thomas and Bill Montgomery who brought a sort of a big personality and a lot of attention to that office. Is there sort of a line that the supervisors have to walk here between, to Chuck's point, having somebody who can build some name ID in terms of getting ramped up for next year's election, while not maybe antagonizing as many people as some of their predecessors have?
I mean, I'm sure that's probably something that they would like to get. In other words, more kind of a game manager, if you will, as opposed to somebody who is participating in politics on a daily basis. But I think that's just hard to do because at the end of the day, a lot of the issues that the county attorney has to take on, like criminal justice reform and marijuana legalization and things like that, are inherently political issues. And so that person has to make, you know, calls on what the office's position is going to be. So I think it's hard to do that. I think, yes, ideally the board would like it to be a situation where the county attorney is not controversial and is not, you know, generating headlines and not causing board members to have to respond to things that the county attorney is doing. But I just think, these days, particularly with how much of a swing sort of battleground Maricopa County is, you're just going to be dealing with that all the time.
Chuck, in our final couple of minutes, let's talk about Kelly Ward and things that were said about Mark Kelly. Do you accept that Kelly Ward did not actually mean the analogy related to guns when she mentioned how the party should go after Mark Kelly?
I mean, that's what she said, right? So I got to take her at her word. But so then it's just bad judgment, right? It's just bad judgment to use that kind of language with Mark, and who's obviously a victim of gun violence. And so, you know, it's just bad judgment. Did she read the press release that somebody wrote? You know, I've written stuff for candidates and for people before that were like, no, I'm not saying that, you know? And you're like, okay, well, we'll tone it back, you know? And that's part of the editing process of going through that. Did she see it? I mean, did she just say, go ahead and, you know, did she look at it before the staffer wrote the blood and guts line and let's go and not, I don't know, but it's just bad judgment.
Okay, so how has she been in that role, do you think? People were pretty skeptical about how she'd perform. I'm not even talking about raising money in terms of being out there as a figurehead.
Yeah, pretty cataclysmically poor.
appreciate the honesty.
The party's raised less money than, I was talking to an executive director of the party from 1988, and they've raised less money now in the period of time that they are than they had in 1988.
Wow. Okay.
The party chairman's job is to bring people together. She's like a Freedom Caucus chairman, you know, it's the Freedom Caucus chairman. And so, you know, she appeals to that very conservative activist part of the Republican Party, the people who show up at precinct committeemen meetings, the people who, you know, are, you know, big Donald Trump supporters, and they, God bless them, but, you know, to win broader elections, like we're just talking about for county attorney or for on a statewide basis, you got to have a bigger, you know, John McCain always talked about a big tent Republican Party that was about opportunity, that was about inclusiveness, that was about economic opportunity and growth in a growing state. That's not, we're in this ideological box.
Roy, let's get your final comments about 30 seconds. Kelly Ward, how that helps Democrats, affects Democrats in any way?
Well, I mean, on the comments, I thought they were outrageous and really have no place in politics at all. I mean, just as a rhetorical exercise, it should not be said. Now, best case scenario, she didn't read the press release and this is just, you know, oversight on her end and she didn't know that it was going out. Worst case is that she actually did see it and it was perfectly fine and only apologized once she saw that there was a controversy. You know, given her controversial remarks in the past, especially about, you know, Senator McCain during his illness and things like that, I would sort of wouldn't be surprised if it's the latter and she actually did see the language and was okay with it until later. But we just don't know. Either way, it just shows enormous problems, I think, with her, you know, direction over the party and how she's managing things, okay, which is good for Democrats ultimately in the elections.
Yeah. Attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera, Chuck Coughlin of High Ground. Guys, thanks as always.
Always a pleasure, guys.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.